I'm going to do this the right way. And the right thing to do is to say the other guy won, to wish him well, and to pledge my support. And that's what I'm doing.
I think he lost in part because he was not present, didn't take his campaign seriously, didn't run a real apparatus.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we break down the midterm election results, both nationally and in New York's Hudson Valley, with Alexis Grinnell from The Nation. On Election Day, Democrats held off Republicans enough to avoid a red wave election. But defying expectations of an Obama midterm-like shellacking doesn't mean it's all good news for the party. Control of the House has likely slipped away in large part due to races in New York's Hudson Valley.
I'm deeply grateful to the people of the Hudson Valley for giving me their voice and their vote in Washington for 10 years. I'm not going to whine about it. I'm going to do this the right way. And the right thing to do is to say the other guy won, to wish him well, and to pledge my support. And that's what I'm doing.
One of the stinging defeats for Democrats was that of five-term Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, who became the first Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee head to lose their seat in 40 years. Maloney fell to first-term Republican Assemblyman Mike Lawler in New York's new 17th District. Well, despite her politics, my guest Alexis Grinnell from The Nation is not sorry to see him go. And Grinnell joins us now. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Ian. Good to be here.
Now, before we talk about Sean Patrick Maloney, we're speaking soon after the midterm elections. What's your feeling about how things went and compared to expectations?
Well, the fact is the red wave never arrived. And I think the Fox News echo chamber really got that wrong. And so did the sort of more traditional media outside of that echo chamber. There seemed to be one poll that the New York Times and Siena College ran that surveyed fewer than 1,000 voters that managed to freak out the kind of Democrats and Republicans alike, but in different directions, and it proved to be incredibly non-prescient. The reality is that the enrollment rates post-Dobbs, which were overwhelmingly female, actually, that's the story. And that's the difference in the election that we're seeing today. It's those new voters who expressed their outrage, who didn't show up in the polling because they're generally not reached by pollsters, who completely upset the narrative, which was frankly always misleading and continues actually in coverage today. Because, you know, listening to your lead-in, Ian, I was thinking, well, actually, not only did Democrats do better than expected, but they did overwhelmingly well in some places, like in Michigan, where they claimed the state house for the first time in 40 years and flipped the House in Pennsylvania and the Senate in Minnesota. We know that, frankly, the laboratories of democracies are the states, more so than Washington. And that's where real life policymaking that touches people's lives on an everyday basis happens. And it's what matters as we set up for the presidential in 2024. So these are major gains. They're really exciting. And the real black eye on all that is actually New York State, where Republicans picked up 6 seats, including Sean Patrick Maloney's. And that's in part a confluence of factors, largely influenced, of course, by redistricting, but more importantly, by the complete failure of the Democratic Party to launch an operation of any kind.
Now, before we talk more about New York State, let me ask you a tough national question, and that is why? You know, President Biden's polling is not good. Many among Democrats don't want to see him run for re-election, and yet that traditional kind of down-ticket coattails effect appears not to have doomed as many Democrats as maybe was expected.
Yeah, I think President Biden is actually doing a lot better than polls suggest with everyday Americans. And again, polls are extremely dubious. Polling has become a very imprecise science in recent years, in part because of technical problems with reaching people on landlines versus cell phones versus online, but that's a whole different discussion. I think the reality is the Dobbs decision was definitive. It exposed the brutality of the anti-abortion right and their real rapaciousness for for taking away women's human rights and the blood and cost of that decision. So people revolted from Kansas, where the ballot initiative banning abortion failed, to Kentucky, to Vermont, to Michigan, and although it hasn't been decided in Montana yet, the yeses are leading there. So abortion is popular, and taking away people's freedoms is not.
Well, let's go back to the Lower Hudson Valley now. What is your understanding of why Sean Patrick Maloney, a five-term incumbent, lost?
I mean, I think he really shot himself in the foot in the last sort of closing days of the campaign with his Chef Boyardee comment. It was glib and off the cuff. It's when he essentially answered a question about inflation by saying when he was a kid, you know, that just meant Chef Boyardee time, which was really smug, but, you know, kind of betrayed insight into the person he was and is. I think he lost in part because he was not present, didn't take his campaign seriously, didn't run a real apparatus. And, you know, that's in part a function of the fact that he's always built himself as some sort of magical guy who's, you know, knows how to win in swing districts and beat Republicans and still be a true blue Democrat, which was never the case. His entire secret sauce was simply keeping company with Republicans, consistently endorsing them over Democrats, including Mark Molinaro, by the way, who is now, you know, looking like he's going to be the next congressman from New York 19, won by a slim 2-point margin there. And, you know, that frankly, running an operation in New York that siphoned away resources from his other neighbors, including New York 22, where Francis Cannoli was down by 1 point in a Syracuse-based district that should have been an obvious pickup for Democrats. So I think there is a consistent, selfish home politics that caught up with him, and he was frankly replaced by somebody similarly ambitious, who is just as smart and just as slippery and, you know, should probably be very successful for a certain amount of time until somebody else eats his lunch.
Do you give Sean Patrick Maloney any credit for the national efforts of the DCCC in this cycle?
I think it would be misleading to give the DCCC too much credit. I mean, the other thing I do, I'm the co-founder of a public affairs firm called Pythia Public. I have worked on campaigns from attorney general to Congress to your little state Senate race, and I know the DTRIP very well. I think it was largely the Dobbs decision and the fact that those previously inactive, non-activated voters showed up, and they showed up in force, and that individual campaigns, frankly, ran very good races. The DTRIP, yes, played a role, but I think it would be exaggerating his piece of that. And I think the fact that the chairman of the DTRIP was, frankly, taking six-figure resources away from his colleagues to sort of save his own butt in the closing weeks of the campaign isn't a good sign of a great tactician.
Now, let's go back in time a bit and talk about why Sean Patrick Maloney was running in the 17th district to begin with. I guess, where do you assign the blame for the maps that we ended up with in this House race in New York?
Sure. Well, I do hold Andrew Cuomo highly responsible for that. But, you know, redistricting isn't the only reason that Democrats lost in New York. And it would be false to blame it all on him. But I can explain the backstory there very briefly, which is that Andrew Cuomo proposed what was called an independent commission, and I'm using very strong scare quotes there. What the commission was basically a partisan body. The legislative leaders of each house got an appointment, and the rules of the commission were designed to deadlock it. And according to those rules, if the commission deadlocked and could not come to agreement, then the drawing of the maps would revert back to the legislature, which is exactly what we don't want. We don't want politicians picking their constituents. That's not the way it's supposed to work. So the legislature drew some maps, and Republicans sued. They sued, and the Court of Appeals, consisting of the Cuomo-appointed block of judges who are overwhelmingly conservative, sided with them and threw the drawing of the maps down to the lower court in Steuben County, where a judge outsourced the job to a Pennsylvania-based special master. He then drew maps which were competitive, not right-leaning, but competitive. Maps were, frankly, Democrats should be able to win. In fact, Democrat Pat Ryan just won a special election in June, and then another general election just now in a plus 8.5 Biden district, which is by definition a swing district. So it's a combination of factors here, which is that you need to have good candidates, but you also need to have a decent party operation, which we don't have. The party chairman, Jay Jacobs, said he's not at all responsible for what happened yesterday, and the real problem is progressives on the left running primaries, which is a nonsense analysis and makes no sense. In fact, it's the Working Families Party that is the only reason Democrats got elected, including the governor, who won her victory by a 5-point margin, which is the slimmest a Democrat has won in 30 years. That's not great. The Working Families Party made up 4.5% of her victory, which is the margin, and they're the reason she's still around, because they showed up to get them elected. But the state party, and certainly the local party here in New York City, where Brooklyn is the dominant borough, launched no operation to get out the vote. And really, you know, I would say let down the top of the ticket, and there certainly could have been a better effort from her as well. They didn't run a robust campaign, and Zeldin ran a real campaign.
Well, let's talk about the governor's race then. You've taken us there. It seemed dicey in the closing days for Governor Kathy Hochul, but she did end up securing a victory. It was one of the closest gubernatorial elections we've had in New York in a long time. What lessons do you take away from it?
Democrats have to affirmatively and aggressively make their case to the voters. We can't take anything for granted. And frankly, when we do make a case, we win. That's the message. And I was saying before that the Working Families Party made up 4.5% of the governor's victory, which is basically her 5-point margin. The Working Families Party got out there and did a real GOTV operation, get the vote out. They sent texts. They made phone calls. They had people on the street in front of poll sites. That's what you do. And it's frankly basic. It's not even innovative or creative. It's not even a particularly... you know, you don't have to pay a lot of money for that advice. It's just essentially go through a checklist of operations and perform them. That's the baseline. But frankly, Democrats should expect a lot more in New York State, where they outnumber Republicans 2-1. Actually, and in the city, it's 6-1. And actually, in parts of upstate, it's 4-1. So we should have, frankly, the gold standard Democratic Party for the country, except for California. And instead, we're being showed up by places like Michigan.
Do you think Kathy Hochul was a weak candidate or ran a weak campaign?
I think Kathy Hochul is a phenomenally committed public servant who is a very good governor and needs to adapt her approach to politics in a campaign year, which is when you go out on the trail and beat your message hard because it's a winning one.
Just one more thing. You know, it's always interesting to me to try to understand what lessons our elected officials take from their elections. And obviously with the New York State Senate Democrats, who by and large are to the left of Governor Hochul, where do you think she'll go in the next 4 years? Does she look at this election result and, you know, stay in the middle and try to make that broad appeal? Or do you think there's a chance that she'll tack left a little bit now that she's cleared this hurdle?
I think it would be very smart of her, frankly, to take the lessons of this election, which are a sort of a thirst and demand for full-throated Democratic leadership, and apply them. She can do that right now, and it's not really a left or right issue. It's more of a, I would say, just smart governing issue, which is to sign popular legislation. There are a number of bills before her that she could support, get behind efforts to support people over, I would say, corporate interests. She's passed her election. She raised $50 million. Maybe she could stop doing that for a second. Sign and back legislation the majority of people want, especially she does have to pay attention to New York City, which is the, you know, was necessary for her victory. And I think, frankly, do some great bipartisan climate-related work, because we know that people on all sides of the ideological spectrum are concerned about the environment, whether they call it conservation or environmentalism or climate justice. And that's a real and pressing threat that everyone in this country should take seriously. I'd love to see her step up into that leadership role more aggressively, because I think right now, you know, she's hanging out there looking a little weak.
That's Alexis Grinnell from The Nation breaking down the midterm election results nationally and in New York State. Alexis, a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Ian.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.